Invisible Thread, and she's here today to talk about her latest book, Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real-Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Well, Marie, thank you so much for having me on your show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for being with us.
In fact, today is the anniversary of an Invisible Thread. It came out 6 years ago today.
Oh, happy anniversary.
Thank you.
So for readers, or for listeners rather, who aren't familiar with An Invisible Thread, can you tell us a little bit about what it's all about?
Sure, I'll give you a very short version of it. An Invisible Thread, as I mentioned, came out in 2011, and it's a story about a young boy that I met. His name is Maurice Mazak. Back in 1986, in New York City, I was walking up my street, and as I passed him, he was standing on the corner, and he said, "Excuse me, lady, do you have any spare change? I'm hungry." And I said no, and I kept walking. But then something made me stop and go back, and I went back to him, and I said, "I don't want to give you money, but if you would like, I'll take you over to McDonald's, and I'll get you something to eat." And so we had lunch at McDonald's, and we ended up spending some time that afternoon just walking to Central Park, and then I bought him ice cream. He asked if I liked to play video games, so we played a couple of video games, and then we went on our way. But throughout the week, I couldn't seem to get him out of my mind, and on Thursday night, I decided to see if I could try to find him. And unbeknownst to me that night, he was very hungry, and he thought maybe if he stood on the same corner, he would see me again, and I might offer to take him to dinner. And as I turned the corner, there he was, standing in the same spot. I asked him if he was hungry. He told me he was starving, so I took him to McDonald's again. And while we were having dinner, I said, "I've got a great idea." I said, "Why don't you meet me on the corner next Monday night, and we'll go out to dinner again?" And when we were having dinner that following Monday night, I said to him, "I've got a great idea. Why don't you meet me on the corner next Monday night?" So the story of An Invisible Thread is our story that took place, and how we met every Monday for the next 4 years, hundreds of times thereafter, and 30-something years later, we're still good friends.
That is so beautiful. Thank you. And now Angels on Earth is kind of inspired by readers' experiences of reading your book.
Yes. Yes. In fact, after An Invisible Thread came out, I said in the book, if you have your own Invisible Thread story, share them with me. Now, the proverb for an Invisible Thread, it's an ancient one, and it's an invisible thread connects those that are destined to meet. Regardless of time, place, and circumstance, the thread may stretch or tangle, but it will never break. So I asked readers to share their stories with me, and before I knew it, even a month later, I received my very first story from a man by the name of Angel Perez, and he told me his story, and I started to save the stories. And then in 2015, I realized that I had the most beautiful compilation of other people's invisible thread stories of how people had come into someone else's life and had made a profound difference. So there's 29 chapter angel stories, which I like to say.
And I'm really enjoying reading the book. And it's interesting because some of the stories, I remember at least the one story with the man in the bookstore, he had just been reading your book.
Yes, Jim Kettlewell. And what are the odds of that happening? He went to the bookstore because he wanted to actually finish An Invisible Thread. And while he was in the bookstore, he overheard a young man, and this was just after he finished the book and closed it. He heard a young man on the telephone, and he was talking about how he was looking for a place to stay. He had just moved to this new area. He had custody of his young daughter. His paycheck was delayed, and he was looking for a place to sleep for that night, and a lot of the shelters were already booked. And Jim Kettlewell overheard him on the telephone, and when he hung up, Jim asked him to tell him what the problem was. And when Rick explained what was happening, he said, "You know what?" He said, "I can help you out." He said, "Come with me, and we'll go to the ATM machine." And they went to an ATM machine, and he withdrew money, and he gave it to Rick. And Rick, of course, wanted his name and his address. And Jim said it wasn't necessary, but that he hoped that one day when he was in a better financial situation, he would be able to kind of pay it forward. And what's very sad about the Jim Kettlewell chapter, the bookstore, is that in August he passed away. And so he didn't have the opportunity to actually see his book, his story published in Angels on Earth. But I actually spoke in Ohio and invited his wife and his daughter, and they actually came to the speaking engagement, which was really nice.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Now, Laura, with that story, Jim and Rick didn't stay in touch.
No, they did not. It was just this brief encounter. And that's one of the things that I love about Angels on Earth, is that some of the stories are people who have met for just a moment and made a profound difference. And then there are other stories where people have come into each other's lives and have had a lasting friendship.
Thank you, Laura. Now, I'm curious, as Jim was reading An Invisible Thread, there were some things that he picked up on, like little signs that maybe this was an opportunity for him to reach out and to help someone in those situations where we so often see opportunities, like you were passing Maurice on the street and you said, "No, sorry, I don't have any change," and you kept walking. So what is it that triggers this sense of, okay, this is the person that I should be helping?
Well, I think in Jim's case, you know, Jim's father was a pastor, and over the years, he had always tried to instill in Jim the importance of being kindness, the importance of being kind. And what I say all the time is sometimes we have the most beautiful blessings right in front of us, but we have to be able to open up our eyes and hearts to our surroundings to see them. You know, in Jim's case, he became aware of what Rick was saying on the telephone. For me, I became aware as I walked away from Maurice that this child, who was only 11 years old, had said to me, you know, "Excuse me, lady, do you have any spare change? I'm hungry." And those three simple words, "I'm hungry," are the words that made me turn around and go back. So I think sometimes it's a tug at our heart, or it's, you know, our angels telling us that we can make a difference.
Thank you. So you mentioned angels. Now, do you believe in the angels with the wings, or what do you mean when you say angels?
I believe in all kinds of angels. Now, when we think of angels, we think of, I'll speak for myself, I think of these beautiful floating spirits in heaven, and they're floating around with these white, fluffy, beautiful wings. Now, I don't know if you read my first book, An Invisible Thread, but my mother, who passed away at the very young age of only 47, when I was 25, I really came to really believe that my mother was with me every step of the way, particularly after An Invisible Thread came out. So I do believe that there are our angels in heaven, and those are those beautiful white spirits with those fluffy, beautiful white wings, but there are also angels on earth, people who are making a difference in the lives of other people. In fact, in the last chapter of Angels on Earth, I really talk about how my mother has been with me. In fact, that's the final chapter, and it's called The Rainbow, hence the rainbow on the cover of the book. And very early on, when I was going to one of my very first speaking engagements, I talked to my mother all the time, and I asked her if she could please be with me. And I got to the speaking engagement, and it was for big brothers, big sisters. And I noticed one of the littles, and she kept looking at me. And so finally, because we locked eyes so many times, I went over to her, and I knelt down, and I said to her, "Hello." I said, "My name is Laura." I said, "What is your name?" And she looked at me, and in this very sweet voice, she said to me, "My name is Maria." And in that moment, I knew it was my mother's way of showing me that she was with me. So I have to tell you, Marie, I love your name.
Was Maria your mother's name as well?
Well, my mother's name was Marie, but many people called her Maria and others called her Mary. So I have to say I've probably spoken at over 200 speaking engagements, And it never fails. There's always a Marie, a Mary, or a Maria in the room. And I believe it is my mother's way from heaven being able to tell me that she's with me. I also believe she shows me rainbows in all different shapes and forms, and that's why the last chapter is called The Rainbow.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Would you like to get updates on your smartphone in an emergency, even if a cell tower is down? It is possible if the FM chip is activated in your phone. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
We are speaking right now with Laura Schroff. She is the author of An Invisible Thread, and she's here today to talk about her latest book, Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real-Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. Now, your book is separated into seven different sections.
Yes.
Kindness, yesness, outwardness, awareness, uniqueness, clearness, and connectedness. Now, is there a purpose for this breakdown?
Well, yes. I felt that it was important to put certain stories within certain sections, and then I thought it would be great to name the different sections different words. And so there was it was actually a very thought-out process. You know, one of these sections is, I'm just looking for a second. One of the sections is yesness. And the stories within that section under yesness really pretty much have a theme of how angels don't traffic in no. Angels really, for the most part, traffic in yes.
Can you say more about that?
Sure. You know, like the snowstorm, that was chapter 5. And in the snowstorm, it's a story about Linda DiCarlo, and she was 17 years old. And we actually, which is really interesting, we worked together when we were both in publishing. I was on the advertising side, and she was on the business side. And we would get together occasionally for lunch, but we were really business friends. So we really never talked about our childhoods. And it wasn't until An Invisible Thread came out that she actually shared with me her own Invisible Thread story, which, of course, I was so surprised to read about her life. And, of course, she was so interested in reading about my life as well. But she was 17 years old, and her stepfather kicked her out of the house, and it was during a snowstorm, and she traveled on her bicycle for about 3 miles. And the only place she could think to go to was her friend Cynthia's home. And when she got to Cynthia's house, her father and Cynthia showed up at the door, and there was Linda, you know, in a snowstorm, covered in snow, and she had just told them that she had been kicked out of the house and she had no place to go. And Cynthia's father basically said, you know what, please come into our home. It's small, it's crowded. His wife had passed away. And he said, you can stay here for as long as you need to stay. And she stayed there for over a year. So when we say how, you know, angels traffic in yes, just as easily as he could have said no, he opened up his home and his heart, and he allowed her to stay for well over a year, or for as long as she chose to. And then the bookstore, too, you know, which we just talked about, which is Jim Kettlewell's story, is he could have not acknowledged what he was hearing on the phone. And just as easily, he could have gotten up and purchased another book and left the bookstore. But because angels do traffic in yes, he listened to what Rick was saying and then went out and took him with him to an ATM machine. So that's one of the sections.
Beautiful.
And the first, the first section is kindness. And, you know, kindness comes in all different shapes and forms. But the first chapter in Angels on Earth, I was very specific about making it the first chapter because, you know, when people think about wanting to be kind or helping out other people, you know, they say to me, well, I don't have the time, I don't have the money. And what I sometimes say is, you know, sometimes it just takes a moment. in this particular story, Drew Sanchez was in a supermarket, and she saw a young mom with three small children, and the young boy actually had a calculator in his hand. And as they picked up a grocery off the shelf, he would put it into the calculator, and depending on how much it cost and where they were within their budget, he would either put it into the basket or put it back on the shelf. And she could tell, Drew could tell, that, in fact, they were on a tight budget, even by the food that she had in her basket. There were no, you know, exciting things like cookies and ice cream and sweets, but just all of the bare necessities. And it brought her back to a moment when she was a young woman, and she was a struggling mom, and she was on a tight budget, and she thought, you know, I'm in a situation right now where I can show kindness. I can help this woman. So she walked over to the woman. She said to her, I don't mean to be stepping over the line. She said, but I've noticed that it seems to me that you're on a tight budget, and I would love to pay for your groceries. She didn't know how the woman was going to react to it, but the woman looked at her, and she said, thank you, and she started to cry. So Drew mentioned that she'd meet her over by the registers, and she went and waited for about 15 minutes. And when the young mom didn't show up, she went and looked for her. She purchased a gift certificate and then went and found her in the produce department. And Drew said, you know, I have a feeling that you might be shopping a little bit longer, and I do need to get back to work, but I've purchased a gift certificate for you to help you with your groceries. And it was $100. And the woman took it, and she started to cry, and she said thank you and told her how much it would help her and gave her a hug. And as she walked away, two young boys started to scream out, wait, wait. And so Drew turned around, and the two young boys went running up to her and gave her this hug. She knew she would never see these people again, but yet it's a story and a moment in her life that stayed with her forever. And so it was this simple hug that kind of changed her and changed how she sees and views the world when she's out and about. So sometimes, you know, we don't have to change the world to make a difference, but a small act of kindness can actually make a difference.
Oh, that's such a beautiful story, Laura. And as I've been reading Angels on Earth, I find that I tear up a lot with all of these stories because they're all so moving. I don't know if that's the intent, but...
Well, I have to say it was really hard to go through all the stories because I had so many beautiful stories, but it was pretty difficult to pick out the 29. But I have to say that, you know, they are other people's extraordinary stories, and I feel so incredibly blessed that I have been able to tell these stories in Angels on Earth. So I didn't mean for people to cry, but I hear that a lot. And what I also hear, which I just love, is people say they keep the book by their bed table, and before they go to sleep, after a harried, crazy day, they'll just pick up the book and they'll just read one chapter because they feel it's just a great way to kind of end a hectic day.
I was actually going to ask you how you want people to read the book or how you recommend people jump into this book. Is that one of the ways?
Well, I think that's one of the ways. You know, with An Invisible Thread, it was one story that went throughout the entire book. But what is nice about this book is sometimes people say, oh, I don't read a lot because I just don't have the time. And we all get that because everyone today is just so, so busy. But the great thing about Angels on Earth, is that you can read just one story at a time. And so you can read it over 29 days, or if you choose, you can read it over, you know, 2 days or however long you want to spend with the book. But you can kind of slide it in and out, if you know what I mean, like as you're going to work on a train or on a bus, and just do a chapter at a time, because every chapter is like a beginning and an end.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things I really enjoyed about the book, is that it didn't really require reading back to back all at one time to get a lot out of it. And you also have in between each section, you have a little bit of a story or a summary of sort of your own experience or messages. I'm just trying to find the one here. Each section.
Well, for example, the wallet. That's chapter 3. Before chapter 3 is called Ripples, and it's really about how there is this ripple effect that takes place with kindness, and it kind of ripples outward. And that's a story, really. It's a story of Talia Bardash. And I actually went to Talia's school to speak. She had emailed me when she was working on a project in June, and she wanted to know if she could speak to me. And unfortunately, I was traveling, so by the time I got back from being out of town and I was able to contact her, her assignment was over. And I said to her, I feel so bad. I said, is there anything that I can do to make it up to you? I feel so bad that I just wasn't around when you emailed me. And she said to me, would you come to my school next year and would you talk about your book? I said, absolutely. I said, if you make a note to call me in your new school year, I said, you have my word. I will absolutely come to your school. And so throughout the summer, she was asking her dad and her mom, do you think she's going to really keep her word? And her father and mother kept saying, well, I'm sure she really meant it, but, you know, people really get busy, and hopefully she'll be able to come. But if not, it wasn't that she didn't mean it when she said it. So, of course, when she called, I said, absolutely. And so I said, the only deal breaker is you have to introduce me. So I went and spoke to her entire school, and her parents came and her grandmother came, and it was the cutest thing because her father kept crying while she was speaking. And then, of course, I got up and I spoke. And when my speech was over, her father said to me, I can't tell you how much this means to me. My daughter talked about this the entire summer, and we were so worried that, you know, you'd be too busy to be able to really follow through. And the fact that you did follow through, I can't begin to tell you how much it means to me. And he said to me, I'm a dentist. He said, and I noticed that Maurice has a chipped tooth. He said, please, he said, let me pay it forward and let me give Maurice a beautiful smile. And there was this ripple effect of kindness and how kindness really can be contagious. And in fact, I don't know if you've gotten to the story of The Helper's High with Dale Atkins.
Probably. Which one is The Helper's High?
You know, I always forget the chapter numbers, but hers is The Helper's High. Let me just see if I can find out what chapter it is. I can't remember all the chapter numbers. Oh, her chapter is chapter 13. Well, Dale Atkins actually is a kindness expert, and I actually met her when we did a show together on Kathy Lee and Hoda. It was a show on kindness, and they invited her because she's an expert, and they also invited me to speak about an invisible thread and the power of small acts of kindness. So we became fast friends, and when I was working on Angels on Earth, I thought it would be great to have a chapter really on kindness. And what Dale Atkins really has studied and what research proves is that kindness is contagious, and you can actually call it a helper's high. And what she means by that is when we incorporate even the smallest act of kindness into our life every day, it makes us feel good. And because it does, it makes us want to do it over and over again. You know, the smallest act of kindness could be opening up the door and letting someone walk in before you. Or if you see someone who has only a few items on a grocery line and you have a full basket, to say, you know what, I only have a few things. You have a full I have a full basket. You only have a few things. Please go ahead of me. Or smiling at someone and saying hello when you're in an elevator together. Those are just small little acts of kindness. But when you do them, they make you feel good, and it makes you want to do them over and over again. And before you know it, you're incorporating these acts of kindness into your daily life.
Beautifully said.
GOSA, the Global Outreach Students Association, offers students the chance to learn about global health and international development while providing students with opportunities for practical experience working within disadvantaged communities both locally and internationally. They also collaborate with other clubs to organize global health-related symposiums and competitions. Executive positions are available. Contact them at ubc.gosa@gmail.com.
We are speaking right now with Laura Schroff. She is the author of An Invisible Thread, and she's here today to talk about her latest book, Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real-Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. And we've just been talking about how kindness not only is contagious, but is actually good for our health. It makes us feel good, it lifts our mood, makes us feel better. And I'm guessing it makes the world a slightly happier place every time we choose to do something kind when we could just walk by and ignore it. It has this ripple effect, like Laura was sharing earlier. Now, Laura, I wanted to ask you, the second section is yesness, mm-hmm. and you were talking about the importance of being open and saying yes to these opportunities to be kind to other people and to help other people. But what about, there are certain people, some people, who have a problem saying no. So they're constantly saying yes to their own detriment. So where is the balance between being open and having a yes attitude and taking on more than we can handle?
Well, Marie, when you say it's to their detriment, for example, what do you mean by that?
I mean,
if you don't mind me asking you that.
I mean, people who have a problem saying no, who aren't able to take care of their own needs because they're so busy looking after everyone else. It's almost a compulsion to say yes to other people at their own expense. It's not because they're joyfully helping people. It's because they are afraid to say no for some reason.
Well, you know, I'm from the school of thought where I don't think it ever hurts to always go out of your way for someone. I don't think it really is a bad thing. You know, I met a man just recently at a speaking engagement, and at the very end he came over to me. He told me how much he loved my speech and my talk. He said, you know, he said, I, for many, many, many years, he said, I was always willing to give a dollar or two or pick up a lunch for someone who I saw on the street that was homeless. He said, I just felt this need to be able to do it, and I wanted to do it. He said, but people used to tell me all the time, are you sure you know what you're doing? And they questioned him. He said, and then one day, he said, I saw a young pregnant woman sitting on the side of the street, and she had a sign, and she needed money. He said, and I decided not to do it. He said, I listened to all the people who were telling me I shouldn't do it. He said, and as I got about 10 minutes away from this young woman, he said, I felt really, really bad. He said, and I decided to go back. He said, and when I went back, she was gone. He said, and I never forgave myself. He said, I just thought about that young woman and how in that moment I could have been kind to her. And because I listened to all these other little voices in my head, he said I walked away. He said, and I have regretted that decision. He said, my entire life. And then on the opposite side of that, I had a conversation just recently with somebody else. And he said to me, you obviously do believe in angels on earth. And I said, I absolutely believe in angels on earth. He said, you know, I have to tell you a story. He said, I was driving my car. He said, and it started to overheat. He said, and I pulled it off to the side of the street. He said, and the next thing I knew, he said, this man came from nowhere, and he had a jug of water. And he said, it looks like you need some help. He said, I've got a jug of water. He said, let me help you with your car. And so they put the water into wherever you put it in a car. He said, and I thanked him, and he drove away. He said, and I never forgot that person. And I said, I'm just curious. I said, how long ago was that? He said, probably 20, 25 years ago. And I said to him, you know, I said, it's really incredible. I said, I'm sure that man never could have imagined that 20 or 25 years later, you would still be talking about that story. He never could have imagined that one simple act of kindness of just helping him with his car would have had such a profound impact on you that 25 years later, you're still talking about that story. I don't know if I answered your question. I hope I did.
Well, I just kind of feel, I guess we have a different a different opinion when you've seen the those kinds of stories that affect a person for 25 years, just that small act of kindness that really made a difference and lasted, and I'm sure had a ripple effect, because the fact that he was able to remember the kindness of that stranger probably inspired him to do other kind acts for other people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of thinking about the kind acts where, you know, someone is staying with you, or you've given and given and given, and there is no appreciation. It's just more and more demands, and then the person isn't able to say no. That sort of the selfless, I guess you haven't seen people who
yeah.
do that to their detriment.
Well, I have, and, you know, those kinds of stories are really unfortunate, because just as there are people out there who are kind and they're willing to give of themselves without expecting anything in return, there are those people who are people that do take, and they take advantage. But you kind of hope that when all things are equal, there's still more people who are doing kind things that are appreciated, where there are those people who you give and give and give, and they just don't appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of stories, I hear them too, and they're sad. But hopefully for every one story that I hear like that, there's 25 good stories. I mean, you think about, like, even over the past few months now, I can't believe it's months, because it really is, you know, the devastation that we saw in because of the hurricanes, and, of course, everything that happened in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many people who were helping neighbors, and then there were so many people who were helping strangers. And most of these people, you know, that were really helping strangers, they might never see them again. But the fact that people were doing these incredible acts of kindness, those were the stories that, you know, when you were watching TV in the middle of all this devastation, and of course then Las Vegas, those stories were so wonderful of how people were risking their lives to help someone that was a total stranger.
Absolutely. So many beautiful stories that come out of these tragedies. In the beginning of the book, the story of Jim and Rick, where he helped this man who wasn't able to access any homeless shelters, and he had a young child. There was a period while he was listening to this conversation, Jim was kind of thinking, well, is this guy a con artist? Do I know that he really needs this? So it wasn't that he just jumped right in and didn't think about it beforehand.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, because when I read this story, I was thinking the same exact thing. And, you know, the bottom line is, we'll never really 100% know if, in fact, he was just this really good con artist that took Jim for a ride, or if, in fact, it was really true, because the coincidence of both was really pretty amazing. But at the end of the day, I am sure if he did, I'd like to believe, because I like to see, I always look at the glass half full versus the glass half empty, that if, in fact, it wasn't true, that he thought afterward about that was really not such a cool thing, and that he needs to be a little kinder in his life.
Well, the thing is that Jim really got something. I mean, they shared, there were some synchronicities and coincidences, and they did share a moment. I mean, it didn't seem, through reading the story, that Jim or that Rick was really a con artist. I mean, he wasn't openly asking for money.
No, absolutely not.
And,
but he was speaking very loudly on the phone. And when I was reading the story, I actually, for a moment, I thought that too. But you know what? It doesn't matter, because at the end of the day, it made Jim feel really, really good. Mm-hmm. And hopefully in the meantime, he really did help this man.
Absolutely. Yeah, Laura, I think, I mean, I was just asking about where your line is about having healthy boundaries, because not everybody does, not everybody, you know, Rick was, or Jim was able to afford this money that he gave. And it did make, it did add to his life experience. He felt good about it. He didn't feel like he was giving out of obligation. He felt compelled to help this man, and they shared a moment. So I'm not trying to say, oh, maybe he was a con artist. I didn't
get that. We have to have boundaries. Yeah. We all do. In fact, I moved out of New York City about a year ago. And when I was living in the city on 57th Street, I used to see a man almost every day. And unfortunately, he was in a wheelchair, and he both of his legs were cut off from his knee down.
Oh.
And I used to see him out there on the streets, and it used to break my heart. And so I would either buy him dinner or I would give him money. But one night, it was in the middle of the winter, and it was really cold, and I saw him, and I really, in that moment, wanted to say to him, you know what, come up to my apartment and spend the night. You shouldn't be outside on the street. And I thought, you know what, you're a single woman. You live by yourself. You really don't know this man. You talk to him on the street, but that is not a good thing. So I said to him, listen, can you just hang out for a few minutes? I said, I'm going to go upstairs, and I'm going to go get you a couple of blankets, so at least you can make yourself a little warmer for the night. So, you know, even when I speak at schools, I say to children, we all can do small acts of kindness, but we have to be careful. And, you know, you can do a kind gesture, and that does not mean bringing home a stranger for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to be conscious, and we have to be careful. You know, with me, I was very, very lucky. Maurice was an 11-year-old boy. He was the sweetest child, and it was really the first time I had ever seen a child by himself on a street corner begging for food. And in that moment, I mean, it really kind of broke my heart, and he turned out to be a really good kid, and so we were both very, very lucky.
I like Star Trek.
Yeah, cool.
Awesome.
I love The Lord of the Rings.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm into obscure 1950s atomic monster movies.
Okay. Sure.
I really enjoyed the Michael Bay Ninja Turtles.
We can work with that. Here at the UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society, we accept everyone. We have weekly movies, game nights, and the largest non-academic library at UBC. Come by our club room, 3206D in the Nest. It's a great place to eat lunch, hang out,
and procrastinate.
Check out our Facebook group, UBC Sci-Fi and Fantasy Society, to find out what's going on.
We are speaking right now with Laura Schroff. She is the author of An Invisible Thread, and she's here today to talk about her latest book, Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real-Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. And Laura, you even mention in Angels on Earth how Maurice was taking a risk in saying yes to going to dinner with you.
Yes, in fact, we probably had gone to dinner about four times, and on the fifth time, I just thought it would be really nice to make him a home-cooked meal, so I invited him to my apartment. And I didn't know at the time that Maurice was really scared. He was sure that this was the night that he was going to find out what I really wanted from him. And actually that night he came prepared with a box cutter in his pocket. And I told him to sit down, and I got him he loved Diet Coke, so I got him a Diet Coke. And I said to him, we have to have a really serious conversation. And he was sitting at the very edge of my sofa, and I could tell he was scared, and I went and sat down close to him on the sofa, and I said to him, we have to have a very serious conversation. And he was thinking, here it comes. And I said, the reason why, I said, I've invited you to my home is I consider you a friend. I said, and friendship is built on trust. I said, but I want to make it really clear to you, if anything is ever missing from my apartment, we will no longer be friends. And he looked at me with this very puzzled expression. And I said to him, do you understand what I'm saying? He said, I think so. He said, you just want to be my friend, that's it? And I said, well, yeah. I said, of course, that's it. And he said, oh. And with that, he stood up, he put his hand out, and he said to me, Miss Laura, a deal is a deal. And that night, our handshake solidified our friendship, which was built on trust and a bond that would continue to grow over more than a quarter of a century. But for some reason, that night, I really wasn't nervous, but I didn't know how frightened he was, because he was sure that this was the night. Because he wasn't used to people, particularly adults, being nice to him. In fact, he used to say to me all the time that, you know, when he was on a street corner begging for food, that more often than not, people treated him as if he was invisible.
I just don't even know. I'm just don't even know what to say. I'm just sitting with that. Yeah, because he, being out on the street of a vulnerable kid, he was in a very vulnerable situation, and
right.
his experience of how people treated someone like him was that they were after something, or they pitied him, or they didn't see him as someone who deserved respect. And that was all different with you, but he didn't know going in. It was a big risk for him, but there was obviously something that he sensed in you that was different.
Or at least he was willing to give it a chance.
Yeah, with the box cutter in his
hand. With a box cutter in his pocket. One of the stories in An Invisible Thread, which is probably one of the reader's most favorites, is I would say we knew each other for quite some time at this point, and one day he called from my lobby phone. At that point, we used to see each other on weekends or whenever, you know, we would see each other occasionally on weekends as well, and he called from my lobby phone, and he wanted to know if I could take him to lunch. He told me he was hungry, and so we went to McDonald's, and we were having lunch, and I said to him, you know, I can't bear the thought that you don't eat every day, but because of my really busy and hectic work schedule, I just can't see you every day, so we need to figure this out. I said, so if you'd like, I said, on Monday nights, I really trust you. I said, I can give you money, and you have to be very careful as to how you spend it throughout the week, but at least every day I'll know you're eating. I said, or if you would prefer, on Monday night before we have dinner, we can go to the supermarket. I said, I'll buy you all the things you love to eat, and I could make you lunch, because we only lived two blocks apart. I lived on West 56th Street, and he lived on West 54th. So as you can imagine, 55th Street was like the dividing line of two different worlds. He'd go from my world to his world. And so when I said I would, you know, make him lunch, I said, and then in the morning you can just swing by on your way to school and you can pick it up with the doorman. He said to me, Miss Laura, if you make me lunch, are you going to put it in a brown paper bag? And I was really confused. I said to him, well, do you want your lunch in a brown paper bag? You don't want your lunch in a brown paper bag? I said, you want your lunch in a brown paper bag or you don't? And he said to me, oh, Miss Laura, he said, I don't want your money. He said, I want my lunch in a brown paper bag. He said, because when kids come to school and they have their lunch in a brown paper bag, that means someone cares about them.
Oh, God, I'm going to cry.
I know. No. So the thing about An Invisible Thread that I loved also was it really gave people the opportunity to have an inside look at what it's like for a child who is living in a welfare situation and really has no choice but to fend. These children have no choice but to fend for themselves. And it really gave people like a different perspective on it. And Angels on Earth, it's the same thing where you read these stories and you see how someone who could have been potentially destitute all of a sudden had someone come into their life and had a profound impact. One of the stories is the story of Angel Perez, and that's The Sunburn. And in fact, that was the very first story that I received. In fact, I received it just a month after An Invisible Thread came out. And Angel Perez was now all grown up, and he now works at Trinity College. He's got a doctorate degree. But when he was a very young boy, he and his family, his mother, his father, and Angel, moved from Puerto Rico to the United States, and they were living in the Bronx. And this was back in the late 70s when the Bronx was a terrible, terrible place to live. And he was living, you know, in poverty, pretty much destitute for that type of life. But when he was in high school, he had a guidance counselor that actually really recognized his potential. And she took him under her wing. And she really geared him towards going to college, which he ultimately did. And now he works at Trinity College, and he spends so much of his time trying to really help other young people, you know. He helps them try to change their life. Mm-hmm. But it was a guidance counselor for him that made this profound difference. And he often wonders what his life would have been like had he not had someone who really kind of took him under her wing the way she did.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's so many stories where not every story follows the people throughout an entire, you know, from childhood until adulthood. Sometimes it's just one interaction. But it is amazing how one person who steps in and sees the potential in a child or anyone, it can really make all the difference in the world.
Did you have you had a chance to read the story, The 25 Tacos?
Yes.
With Jose Belares, and how really back when he was just a young boy, 6 years old, going to school, his father had passed away, left the family, unfortunately, in Mexico in poverty, and his mother would make tacos in the morning, and before he would go to school, he had to sell 25. And a woman noticed that he was out on the streets, and it was not a safe area, and she asked him what he was doing, and he said that he was selling these tacos. His mother would make these tacos in the morning, and he had to do this before he'd go to school, and she asked him some questions about school, and she realized he was really telling the truth. And so this woman said, you know, in the morning, after you've sold some tacos, come to me, and whatever tacos you have left, I'll buy the rest. And she would buy these tacos from him every morning. And then his mother and the rest of the family ended up moving to the United States. And Jose never saw that woman again. He never really had a chance to say goodbye to her. But he never, ever forgot that woman. And today he went to college, and he continues to share kindness as a father and as part of his profession. So that was a brief encounter with this woman who just said, you know what, bring the rest of the tacos here, and whatever you've got left, I'll buy them. And I've kind of always had this dream that this woman would read Angels on Earth, and she would say, oh my God, I'm that taco lady.
Aww. I hope that the story does get to her. But even if it doesn't, I mean, it's inspired so many other people who read that story. And so I'm wondering, we have just a few minutes left in the show. We've been speaking with Laura Schroff. She is the author of Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. Are there any tips that you recommend for how to notice an opportunity to help?
Well, what I always do say, and I believe it because I experienced it myself, that if we do open up our eyes and hearts to our surroundings, sometimes the most incredible blessings are right in front of us. But we have to be aware. We have to be conscious. Another thing is, you know, we've become this selfie society. Everyone is taking selfies, and selfies are great, but when you turn the camera to take a selfie, it's a very narrow kind of picture that you're taking. But when you turn that camera around, it gives you a much different perspective and a much bigger picture. So it's to be more aware, and particularly now with the holiday season coming up, there's so many people that are underprivileged, who are struggling, and for those of us who are fortunate to be able to help other people out, you know, have that ripple effect, do that ripple of kindness, because it does ripple outward, and people do remember kindness. And, you know, I do believe that we all have the potential to be someone else's angel on earth, even if it is just for a moment in time.
Beautifully said. Thank you, Laura. Now, do you recommend more of sort of an anonymous angel, or what's your favorite type of kindness that you like? Because you mentioned practicing kindness every day.
I don't think it really matters. I think particularly right now, you know, the news, I have to say, I do think is a little bit negative. and I think that if we can all just try to be a little bit kinder to each other, that it could make for an easier situation. So it's just, it's a matter of just being aware and stopping for a moment and actually making a difference when you have that opportunity.
Beautiful. So it's not necessarily making these huge sacrifices or these lifetime commitments. It's just letting someone ahead of you in traffic or at the grocery line or being friendly with someone in the neighborhood. Little things like that make us want to be more kind.
You know, I also have an Invisible Thread Christmas story out, and that's a children's book. And I speak a lot at elementary schools, and I love to ask the children what they think are small acts of kindness. And actually, one story is in Angels on Earth. And when I spoke it in an elementary school, and I turned it over to the children to tell me what they thought were small acts of kindness, and when no one put their hand up, I said, well, I have a suggestion of an act of kindness. I said, what about the next time when you're out on during recess and you're on the playground and you're all playing and you notice one child standing by themselves? I said a small act of kindness would be to go over to that child and say, do you want to come over and play with me and my friends? And the next thing I knew, this little boy, Anthony, he raised his hand and he said to me, Miss Laura, that happened to me. I said, what happened to you, Anthony? He said, everybody was playing on the playground. He said, and nobody wanted to play with me. And then all of a sudden, this one child raised his hand, and he said, Anthony, I'll play with you the next time. And then before I knew it, all these kids were chiming in and saying, we'll play with you, we'll play with you. And that's a small act of kindness. And it starts from when they're really little.
I love that. And you've mentioned in your book, Angels on Earth, how receptive and excited kids get about acts
they
of kindness.
They love it, yes. Yes, they do. In fact, I spoke at a school, this goes back a couple of years ago, in Ohio. And again, after we do the Q&A, then I turn it over to the students to talk about, let them talk about what they think are small acts of kindness. And I was signing books. The event was over, and I was in a room, and I was signing books. And a teacher came over to me, and she said to me, you know, someone in the cafeteria who works in the cafeteria wanted to know what happened that morning, because so many of the children were saying please and thank you, and they were saying, wow, the food was really good. And the teacher, the person in the cafeteria, wanted to know, like, what happened. So I even say, you know, in the schools, you know, if you see a custodian, take a moment and say, you know what, thank you for making my school look so pretty. That's an act of kindness.
Just appreciating.
Just appreciating. And, you know, when I talk at schools and the kids really get involved in discussing what they think are small acts of kindness, sometimes the acts of kindness are really big. I spoke at a middle school once, and all the kids were talking about what they thought were one small act of kindness. And when the event was over, this little girl, she was about 11 years old, she came up to me and she said to me, Miss Laura, can I tell you my act of kindness? So I said, sure. She said, I didn't want to raise my hand. I said, well, that's okay. I said, what's your name? And she told me her name. I said, do you want to go over into the corner and you can tell me in the corner so no one can hear? And she said, yes. And she said to me, well, you know, my mom, she passed away about a year ago, and it's been really, really hard. And my favorite aunt is really sick right now. She said, and after hearing you speak, she said, I decided my act of kindness is going to be, I'm going to be stronger for my cousins. And I looked at that little girl, and I said to her, I have to tell you, honey, I said, that's the biggest act of kindness I have ever heard. I said, that's not a small one. And she said, do you think it's big? I said, it's the biggest one I've ever heard. I said, in fact, and then she said to me, and I would really like to read your book. I said, well, you know what? You can't tell everybody. I said, but if you would write your name and your address down, I said, I would love to send you a copy. I said, but you can't tell all your friends because I can't be sending everybody books. I said, but I want to send you a book. And then I ended up writing her father a note because I felt that I didn't want her at 11 years old reading the book on her own, and just suggested that either he should read it with her or an adult should, and not to read it by herself. And I got a phone call from the grandmother a couple of days later saying how she got the book and she just cried and cried. She couldn't believe that I actually sent her the book. But that was the biggest act of kindness I've ever heard from a little 11-year-old girl.
So beautiful. Thank you so much, Laura. We've been speaking with Laura Schroff. She's the author of Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real-Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. Where is the best place you want people to pick up this book?
Well, I always love to say, if you have a local bookstore, please go to your bookstore. We love to support bookstores. But if not, you can always get it on BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.
Thank you.
And also, too, they can also go to my website, which is laurashroff.com, and there is a section where you can actually see all of the pictures of all of the angels in Angels on Earth.
Oh, beautiful. And you can also send in your own story.
Absolutely. Would love to receive more stories.
And that was Laura Schroff. She is the author of Angels on Earth, Inspiring Real-Life Stories of Fate, Friendship, and the Power of Kindness. You can find her at laurashroff.com. Her last name is S-C-H-R-O-F-F. I want to send you lots of love. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be well. Namaste.
Did you know UBC students get 20% off organic, farm-fresh produce from the UBC farm? Come by the farm and eat local. Really, really local. Supported by British Columbia's Buy BC program.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
It could be global, trance, spoken word, rock, the usual and the weird, or it could be something different. Oral Tentacles. Thursdays, 12 to 6 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
The Crane Library is looking for student volunteers to record textbooks for those who cannot use print at the university. If you are a UBC student who is computer literate with an ability to read university material aloud and you have a willingness to learn new techniques, we ask for a two-hour commitment once a week. For additional information and to set up an audition, call 604-822-6114 or email crane.volunteer@ubc.ca.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
Slavery, turn our days and weekends free, vacation paid Hey, it's Cynthia from The Bike Kitchen. We moved, but we are still nearby. The Bike Kitchen is now located on East Mall in the trailer between Irving, Cape Barber, and Brock Hall. Come down and check out our selection of used bikes, work on your